Så er det igen blevet tid til at byde velkommen til Papstinenser, din podcast om brætspil. Din studievært er Christian Bach Petersen.
Velkommen til Papstinenser, din podcast om moderne bræt- og kortspil, præsenteret i samarbejde med papsko.dk, hvor du kan finde nyheder, anmeldelser, artikler og anbefalinger, alt sammen om brætspil. Mit navn er Christian Bach Petersen, og i dag der er jeg alene i studiet om at det og det med en podcast lidt ud over det sædvanlige, synes jeg. Fordi i mit ikke papliv, altså det jeg laver til hverdag, der arbejder jeg inden for teater. Og her fik jeg for et par måneder siden et tilbud om at opleve en teaterforestilling, der bliver annonceret som indeholdende elementer af brætspil. Det gjorde mig nysgerrig, men det gjorde mig selvfølgelig også lidt skeptisk, fordi great, tænkte jeg. En forestilling, hvor publikum skal rulle en terning, der så påvirker det, der sker på scenen. Altså. Men jeg meldte mig alligevel til og dukkede op hos gruppe 38 i Aarhus, hvor forestillingen Utopia spillede. Utopia er skabt af den gruppe, der hedder Trickster P, som består af italienske Christina Galbiati og tyske Ilja Luginbuhl. De har base i Schweiz, og det, de præsenterede for os ude på Aarhus Ø i hos gruppe 38, det var langt fra et roll and move-spil eller noget med et sjovt quiz-element. I stedet blev vi som publikum lidt ind i en mørk teatersal, hvor et stort spillebræt stod oplyst i midten. Og ude ved siderne, der var der så stole til os i sådan små grupper af fire og et lille bord ved hver af de her grupper. Brættet bestod af sådan en masse firkantede felter i naturtræ, som var sådan placeret side om side i... Det var ikke sådan en ren firkant, men der var sådan lidt ud til siderne også. Og sådan, tilsammen så skabte de så sådan et stort bræt af tiles, hvorpå der kunne placeres andre tiles. Herefter så kan vi forklare reglerne, at hver runde, der skulle hvert hold trække en brik fra en pose, som ligesom blev sendt rundt, og så skulle man i fællesskab placere den brik, man havde trukket ude på brættet, efter nogle sådan specifikke placeringsregler. Og herefter, når alle hold havde placeret deres brik, så reagerede brikkerne ligesom på deres omgivelser. Og de fire typer, der brikker, man kunne trække, det var mennesker, det var dyr, det var planter og det var svampe. Og de var så sådan hver deres specifikke farve, men ellers så det sådan meget abstrakt ud. Og alle de her brikker, de kunne alle sammen sådan vokse, så man kunne, der kunne blive placeret sådan nogle andre tokens ovenpå dem, så de ligesom voksede i styrke og havde noget mere med livskraft i sig. Den livskraft, den kunne så stige, og den kunne svinde. Men det var sådan meget enkelt, lækre træelementer, så meget æstetisk klart. Jeg tænker, vi lægger et link ud til en trailer for det, hvor man kan se, hvordan brikkerne og hele systemet sådan fungerer i trailerformat. Men hver brik fulgte nogle specifikke regler. Menneskebrikken kunne for eksempel placeres alle steder, når man havde trukket den, men de kunne ikke rykke sig, efter de var placeret. Og de havde brug for en af de andre tre typer brækker for at kunne overleve. Det vil sige, at de skulle have noget at leve af. Og som mennesker er, så levede de, hvis de kunne vælge selv, så levede de i prioriteret rækkefølge af helst dyr, herefter planter og nødsvampe. Men hvis nu der ikke var andet, så var de villige til at leve af det. Plantebrikkerne kunne kun placeres ved siden af eksisterende plantebrikker og formerede sig af sig selv, altså rent fotosyntese. Det vil sige, at de voksede uden at der skete noget omkring sig. Og dyrebrikkerne for eksempel, de rykkede sig mod plantebrikker, hvis de ikke havde nogen plantebrikker ved nærheden for dem, fordi sådan rykkede de derhen, fordi de skulle bruge dem som føde. Så en brik placeret per runde, per hold, og så efterfølgende så sørgede de to skuespillere, der var til stede, på sådan meget, på meget rituel façon at udfolde reglerne, altså flytte de brikker, justere de brikker alt efter de regler, der var, de kørte fra højre mod venstre, og så gennemgik de simpelthen hele brættet. Og på den måde så skabte vi inde i teaterrummet og siddende ude fra kiggen ind på det her bræt, der skabte vi vores eget lille system, hvor vores valg af brikker og hvordan vi placerede dem, det påvirkede systemet og sendte vores egen lille fælles verden i en særlig retning. Og kombineret med, at hvert gruppe så havde et særligt mål, de skulle nå. Det kunne være for eksempel dannelse af specifikke mønstre eller en vækst på x antal brikker i hver eneste runde, og et par sjove twists undervejs, hvor skuespillerne simpelthen lavede et afbræk, som gjorde noget ved, hvordan verden fungerede. Det skabte en virkelig stærk og interaktiv oplevelse, hvor den ritualiserede teaterdel, den understøttede både stemning, men også spilmekanik. Giver det mening? Hvis ikke, så giver det måske mere mening, når I har hørt mit interview med Christina og Ilja, som står bag Utopia, og som faktisk lige nu har endnu et mix af teater og brætspil på beding. Det fortæller de også lidt om i interviewet. Så prøv at lytte med. Hello, Ilja, and hello, Christina. You are from Trickster P, and I've just told my the Papstenza audience about my experience with Utopia, but welcome to Papstenza.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You are part of, you are Trickster P, and would you do a quick introduction of yourself and the things you do, just very short?
Yes, so Trickster P is a multidisciplinary art project. We both have a background in theater, but since many years we really like to mix theaters with other disciplines. And since a couple of years, we are really exploring the game or the game design as a possible art form. So we are exploring how it's possible to merge somehow theater and game design in order to create participatory experience for the audience. As you will notice, we often speak about audience and not participants. This is because of our background in theater.
Yeah, that would actually be one of my questions. Like the people who partake in Utopia, are they participants or are they audience? But you've thought about that about yourself. You've thought about that yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And I have talked about a bit in Danish about my experience with Utopia. How do you describe Utopia when you pitch it to people or need to tell people what we should do with this particular part of Trickster P product line?
So, to be honest, it's always very difficult for me to explain what it is, both because it's really a kind of hybrid form, but also because I don't want to reveal too much. And it's often like that, you know, because if you know everything in advance, the experience is completely spoiled. So what I like to say, this, of course, is a game theater in which participants or audience are invited really to take decisions, to make choices in order really to find a possible world in which different communities, animals, humans, plants, and mushrooms can live together. Maybe in balance, maybe not. Who knows?
Who knows? And can you tell how many, an experience like Utopia, how many participants or audiences is there for one round of Utopia?
So we usually, the participants are divided in groups. We usually work with five groups of three, four people. So it is about 15 to 20 people. We can get to 22. We like to keep the groups not so big because it's very important, the discussion within the group. I think this is a very important aspect of the project. So of course, the bigger the group it is, the more difficult it is really to take choices and to discuss together. So as for me, I think the perfect number is groups of three because it's not binary. Of course, with four, it works very well as well. So let's say between 15 and 20, 22 people.
Okay, cool. And where did the idea of Utopia start? Because to me, it's completely new, and I've spent like 10 years in theater and 15, 20 in board games, and I was really surprised about it.
Shall I? We want to... Yeah, no. So for me, I like to say that Utopia is really a son of pandemic. During pandemic, when it was not possible to do theater, we really interrogate ourselves a lot about what is theater for us, what we were missing, really, what is the core of the experience we were missing. And I think our answer was really that theater for us is the fact of being together in the same time and in the same space. So we wanted to trigger a little bit this concept and to create a project in which audience is really invited to do together. And we said, why we don't try to do a game in which it's really possible to come back together after this art time, doing in a ludic way, really in the pleasure to being together with the pleasure of doing together. So that was the starting point. And then during the investigation, we really realized that also in terms of topics, we liked not to reflect only on humans, but to have this reflection on different species or different communities, as we like to call them, living together. So that is really the background. And I have to say, I have to admit, I'm not a person of game. I do not play very much. Ilya is much more in that. So I think he can tell a little bit more about the experience, really, to use game mechanics and transform them in a dramaturgical pattern somehow.
During the development, we had to do so many choices about game mechanics, but also idea-wise, because we tried to get together four different communities and how to manage it. And to get these four communities together somehow, to accept the others or to convivere.
Coexist
one next to the other. And the challenge in going on and finding the right game mechanics that can also express something, that can talk on topics really and not only be a nice game mechanic. So the mechanics really needed to be to serve something. And that was not easy, because during the development of the game mechanic that went on parallel with all the contents that we had, sometimes you find a fantastic game mechanic that, oh, it's beautiful, it's nice, so challenging, but then it does not work with the content, with the message that is behind, or all the studies we have done on the nature, on the coexistence of these communities. And so it was really challenging to find a way. And the fact to be in theater is a second challenge, because the audience is an audience. It's not gamers. So to bring together people like Christina, they do not like games. They do not need to play. And me, I meet other people to play together, to find a way to match them in the same place. It's something, it's really challenging, but in the end, it's quite a powerful thing to bring together. Like we do on the table, on Autopia, we bring together different communities.
Of humans, in that case.
Sometimes there are spectators, gamers, children, adults, whatever. And I like that. And I can also add that this point is really strong in Autopia, and we didn't knew that. The bringing together different people to do one simple, more or less, together.
Yeah,
to find a way together. Yeah. That is really strong, yes.
Yeah.
I just would like to add that I totally agree with Ilya. It was, in a way, it was a kind of experiment for us as well, because we didn't do anything like that before. We didn't know if something like that could work. And it was very interesting because we contacted several game designers in order to find one to work with. Mm. And their reaction was a little bit like, oh, these people from theater, they want to do a game. They do not really understand what game is. And then it was very interesting, the collaboration, to be together, to find, to put different worlds and different disciplines together was very interesting to me.
Yeah. Okay. And the name of the game designer who you ended up working with, what was his name?
Pietro Polsinelli. He is a game designer from Florence, Italy. He's mostly game designer for video games. So I think it was very interesting for him as well to meet the theater field and to realize how do we work. And he was also a little bit, at the beginning, it was a little bit, what is this? Let's try. And he's a very curious person. And now after that, we worked with him again for the game, the second production we realized, which is the most recent production about gaming, game design, using game design. And yes, it's a very interesting collaboration, I think, for both of us, I hope.
Okay. Can I ask a bit about the design? Because I was really impressed on how you introduced the rules very like organically and easily, because rules, and I know this as like an avid gamer, rules can be really hard, and they're really hard to explain. And there's a lot of rule books that's actually pretty terrible, because it's all in the designer's head, but it doesn't convey easily. So can you tell me a bit about how you make non-gamers understand this rule? And because it was pretty easy in my experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for me, this is the power of theater, of the dramaturgy of theater, because we really had a lot of discussions about rules. How can we introduce them? Being in a theater, of course, when you go in the theater, it's not very interesting if you get an instruction sheet and then you try to play. So we had a lot of discussion about how we can introduce them in a dramaturgical way. And we decided really to introduce this principle of learning by doing. So we look at the consequences, and looking at the consequences, we learn the rules. And I think this is very effective, both, as you said, in terms of learning rules for everyone, not only in the head, but really experiencing. And also, for me, it's very coherent with the message or with the context we are working on, because I think we humans, we always want to know everything in advance and to control everything and to control nature. And as the topic is really how we can try to treat the different species on the same level, it's very interesting for me, really, this learning by doing, which is through our rationality, of course, but it's also through our stomach, our belly, our instinct. And so it's both. I think this is very dramaturgical, is very theatrical. Is the entrance was really from that side.
I think because the audience they place a community on a table, and when they start, they actually don't know. They can just have a kind of feeling of what could it be when a human, when I place it there. Maybe he needs to feed or to eat something. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe he moves. Maybe not. It's just an intuition at when they start. And they place it. So they have a kind of responsibility, but very light. So when they start, audience is a kind of little baby that is learning a new world. And then there are the consequences. The audience is looking on the consequences. They are developing and changing. And through these consequences, what happens? They learn the rules. And it's a really nice way, I think, to grow, to let grow the audience. And while they are growing, they have always also a little success feeling. Ah, yeah, now I get it. I can control it better. And more they know about the controlling, more they see the difficulties. And this is somehow really a reality, what we also have in the normal world. And I think I'm telling that now, after 150 and more shows of Autopia, so I can observe that. We didn't knew that by starting, but the fact of building that dramaturgy of learning by doing during the show, during Autopia, during the play, I think it's so an important clue that audience can grow in that game and it becomes a little part of them. So they have many successes and unsuccesses also.
Yeah. Again, if in the game design also, that you said that people are there in groups of three, but there's like five groups of three, and they all have different, every group gets a separate goal or a success criteria in the beginning, and they don't correlate across the groups. Actually, they maybe step on each other's toes and go in counter directions. Can you tell me a bit about that and what that creates in the room?
Yeah, that was something that we'd introduced in the game very early in the process of as a mechanic, and we have two different mechanics or two different, one is this individual task, let's call them, and one is really the collective task, which is the balance. And then we realized that in terms of dramaturgy, it's very important to have the individual task before, so that everyone gets really a little bit in this competition, and I want to get my task, it's very important for me. This is really something that when we play, this side of competition is very important, and we try to use use it compared connected to the big topic. And then once the balance, the common goal is introduced, I think there is a little bit of a conflict. Shall I go for my individual task or shall I go for a collective? And so everyone has to decide that. And so this little conflict, big little conflict, I think is really the core of Utopia. So and we play a little bit like that in terms of really understanding that, yes, we can go for our individual task, but if we really want to change something, we maybe should open a little bit our vision and try to develop a kind of common intelligence or something like that.
Yeah. Maybe coming back to the task, to the individual task, as Christina called them, a task is quite important to give an orientation to the audience, to the gamers. They need a task, something to do, because once you get once you are not child anymore, you ask yourself, what will I be when I be a big person? So I will be a farmer or whatever. Mm-hmm. I need to know that I will go in some direction to be something. And I think also the gamers, the audience, need that. So once they have a little task, they feel more safe generally. And then they go for their task. And we worked quite a lot on this task because, yes, they do not match perfectly together. But actually, no one is against the other.
No.
So we really worked a lot on these five tasks, which are different, which are completely different aspects. One or the other is also a little bit abstract. But if you, once you understand that, they have other tasks, and once you have also this success in getting your task, and it helps to create a better world in front of you. Once you understand that the others are a little bit against you, but not really, maybe if we work together, it can change something. Yes. But having this task is really important also to give a name to the audience. Mm-hmm. And yes, this is my task. Mm-hmm. Little successes are so important.
I think very, very much it triggered the endorphins in your head and saying, mm-hmm. Oh, we succeeded again. And you can hear the sighs from the other groups when they don't succeed.
It's like, they don't, mm-hmm. yeah.
And you end up guessing, what do you think their task is? And
saying, exactly, yes.
Why didn't they succeed? So that also creates like a dynamic and a tension in the room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah. Again, the game design. You worked with the game designer coming up with it, and the first thing I asked you after I had taken part in Utopia is the tiles you draw. The communities during these cycles where you go through. Do you cheat? Do you swap out tiles so the game doesn't break or it goes in a certain direction? And you said no.
No. Also because, and this is very important for me, because in the previous projects we created before Utopia, one of the points it was that our dramaturgies in theater were really very strict. So we decided everything. I like to work very much on very precise dramaturgy. And this can be a very strong aspect, but can also be a little bit like controlling. So I think the fact of working on game is very fascinating for me because I have, and we have to allow some randomness. And we decided really not to cheat. So and it's very powerful to realize that the mechanics of the game are strong enough. Every time is different. Sometimes randomness is really crazy for us as well. So there is just one community coming out from, there is a pickup from a bag. And sometimes you have just one community and it's so many pieces of that community and we don't want to control. And at the end, it works. So it's very fascinating. And we really have this rule not to trick.
Yeah, I think it's a really important rule that our game designer said that if you trick, the audience will feel bad. They will feel tricked. Mm-hmm. They will, now they can change rules whenever they want. And after a while, you will lose the audience. And during the liturgical part that we had to arrange to get a continuous tension, more or less a growing thing. Sometimes we were thinking we should cheat because it would be better now to give the audience that. But then it ended up always more complicated, because then really, because to really cheat well and good, you have to know everything. And not cheating and having a good mechanism that works without cheating and gives that tension is really much mm-hmm. better. But it was a long process to get there. Mm-hmm. It would be easier to cheat, definitely. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it is not, it's so, and the audience can feel that. I'm so sure. Sure, they asking, oh, how are they doing? How it is going on and why? But I think deeply inside them, they trust. Mm-hmm. They trust.
And I think this trust is very important also because we give rules one after the other. Yes. And so they have to trust, and they feel the trust that we are not changing the rules as we want every day.
Yeah.
And so it's really something that we can to install from the very beginning. And I have the feeling it works. There is never this thing just to say, hey, but now you introduce this rule, why it is like that? So this is really important to have this common ground and to trust on that.
Yeah.
What is also nice is while developing the mechanics behind the game, we had to accept also some compromises sometimes, so we could not express so well what we wanted behind, for example, the community of mushrooms. We had some desires, but we could not, because it would change completely the whole stuff. So we had to accept compromises, but at the end, and Pietro, the game designer, said, with a little bit of luck, we found a mechanism that really stays.
Stable. It's very stable.
It can be also if an audience say, let's try to see if we can break the mechanism. You cannot.
You can try, but
it is a self. It's a world. At one point, it's a world going on. And you, once the world started, you cannot break the world. You can just modify the world. You can just... It is as it is. I think our world, the world,
the
real one, in German, my mother tongue is German, we always said, in a little while the world will go down. It means the world will break.
Yeah.
I think the world will never go down, never break. Maybe there will be so many changes on it, but not break. So it's just a going on. And I think that is so beautiful in Utopia that represent that. You cannot break that world.
Okay. But I imagine you must have run through hundreds and hundreds of tests, because I mean in board game design you often come across games that has something broken.
Yes. Yes.
And we always say, "Oh, they should have spent more time playtesting it." But I imagine Utopia has been tested.
Yeah.
On two different yes. sides. One is really with audience, in order really to understand how audience play, someone who doesn't know anything, and our reaction and the understanding of the rules, for example. That was one part of the test. And the other part was really Ilya playing alone for hours and hours in order really to see the possible consequence of
break
each move.
Points. Yeah. 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 Breaking points. And there were always a lot. But I must say, and now I'm remembering the process, because it was so rich between Christina, me, Pietro, a game designer. We never worked with a game designer. Then with the graphic designer also, that has to adapt something. It was all a dialogue, and all we were in, dramaturge. And once I found a breaking point in the rules or in the mechanics, I could just go to the dramaturg and Christina and say, we have this problem. Mm-hmm. And they solved it sometimes not from a mechanics
no.
idea, but from the
Content.
And that is just amazing, because then there is a logic behind how to solve it. And I think it was so a rich process behind that, also to open all the possibilities and then to distillate it to this little world, four communities, few rules, and some special events. And that, I think that is so rich. In I would suggest to all the game designers to work with a dramaturg, for example, a theater dramaturg. Why not? Because then they are giving the experience, the living experience of the players in the game. It's not just mechanics, because many games, they are just mechanics with a colorful playboard.
Yeah, but that's super interesting. And again, I imagine that the success and design of Utopia has pushed on, because now you have another types of art forms product in the game. Can you just quickly tell us about the game, which is like from 2024?
Yes. So as I said, when we created Utopia, we decided, at least I decided, to use game design, but without, it was just an intuition. I was really not aware of the power of game design. And it was only by really playing Utopia with the audience that I really realized the power of using games in as an art form, and to see how many different people can be involved and all this kind of participation and inclusions, all these kind of topics. And so we decided really to take a time to do a research about games as possible art form, which is very interesting also in terms of references and game studies and everything. And the game is a second game we created. It is more about capitalism, so it works more on how we really relate with the economics models we are involved in, or we are in the system, with the systems we are related to. And so I think compared to Utopia, it's more on the competition, on how much the competition of the game. And I think the big question behind is really, the title is The Game, and the big question behind is really, are we really immersed in a game, in the system we live every day? And how a system, a big game, can really somehow influence our way of relating with.
Yeah. During Utopia, we really discovered a powerful thing, the fact of gaming, the being together and playing brings something out from humans. Once they are triggered to play, to game, they are so triggered in something really powerful and strong. We didn't knew that actually, and we didn't knew that also it's going on in people. They actually not player, but they are audience people, just to have a look on what is going on. In Utopia, as an audience, you can just influence a world. You cannot decide. That is by purpose, because as in the real world, we as a little human have just the influence on the world. We cannot decide alone. But that gives also a little feeling of impotence in Utopia. So you feel a little bit, but I see what I have done, but I cannot change alone. I'm not strong enough alone. We should be more together. And in the game, the new production, that is a little different, because in the game you can quite decide everything. So you are much more powerful. And the feeling of afterwards, to seeing what have you created, have you done it? Because you have chosen to do that. Have you done that because of any interests or pleasure? And then realizing what have you done in the game is that. So you have the power. What you want to do, you can do.
Mm-hmm. But you will see the results.
Yeah, exactly.
And you will see the results, yes.
Okay. One of the things I find really interesting about Utopia, and which also sounds in there in the game, is the sort of the themes. Because when I think one of the powerful things about Utopia is that it has, when you see how it the elements, it could very easily have become humans bad, plants good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that at all. There's no like lifted finger and say, you humans, you should do this and be more eco-friendly or something. And it feels like a bit of the same in this. You don't take a stand or say this is good or bad. So can you tell me a bit, because these are like powerful themes and themes that really can get people riled up.
Mm-hmm. I think this is really an artistic choice for me. It's really important that we don't want as artists to put ourselves on a stand and say, hey, we know what is right and what is wrong, and we want to teach you how you have to do. I think really the power of art is really to mirroring reality and really to show which is the complexity of realities and all the different possibilities. And so we always try not really to give a message in the sense right or wrong, but more really to involve people in dealing with complexity and realizing how we as individual and as a part of a society or as a part of a community, how do we act and which are the consequences of our actions. I think it's really very important, at least to me, it's really very important.
It is definitely really important. And it is also, I think, 100 times more powerful if the audience realize. Only realizing, they don't have to try and change anything. Just realize, I do that. That realizing is much more powerful than someone that is telling you it is bad or is good. The risk, obviously, is sometimes it can, in our proposal, come out better, and sometimes not. This is a risk, but I think it's a good risk.
For me, the bigger compliment I get out of our games is really when people say, yes, it was very fun and I had to think a lot about it after that. This is really, so I'm always very touched, because it means that there is something which is not over when the curtains come down, but it goes on and you realize after how did you act it? And this is really the power of all game studies are really on that, to create a context in which you can act in a different way and to realize how you are acting.
Yeah. And I think that's where like the theater part very much come in, because that's what a lot of people will say, what is the power of theater? It's like make people bring something home and they think about it. Whereas in when I play a board game, it's not often, oh, maybe I think that's why it went wrong, or that's I should have done this instead. But the thought process and in making people think, and I think you merge these two in this like really well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Ilya and Christina, I think I've taken enough of your time. Thank you very much. We'll launch this in the podcast, and we will tell people if you return with either the game or Utopia to somewhere near Denmark. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. We would really love that.
Yes. And then we will talk again, because I'm very curious on the game as well.
Yes. Hope to have the opportunity to do that. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Tak til Christina og Ilja for at dele ud af deres erfaringer med Utopia og tanker om brætspil som delelement i andre former for kultur og oplevelser. Jeg synes, det var virkelig fedt. Jeg var meget positivt overrasket, og det samme var alle de ikke-brætspils erfarne publikummer, jeg deltog med sammen, da jeg prøvede at spille Utopia. Og jeg håber, at Trickster P og Christina og Ilja de vender tilbage til Danmark på et tidspunkt, enten med Utopia eller med deres nye The Game. Og så frem så tænker jeg, at Paps Nenser nok skal slå trum for det og fortælle om det. Det kommer med varme anbefalinger herfra. Og med det så er vi nået til enden af den episode af Paps Nenser. Find links til Utopia og Trickster P på papsnenser.dk eller på www.papsgo.dk/podcast. Husk, at du kan støtte Paps Nenser på tier.dk. Så kan du med i lodtrækning næste gang, vi udvælger en lytter, der kan vælge indholdet af en bonusepisode, som er gratis for alle. Hver en krone fra tier bliver brugt til hosting, bedre optageudstyr og promotion af brætspil som hobby. Du kan finde Paps Nenser på Apple Podcast, på Spotify, på Podimo, eller hvor du ellers sender din podcast, og vi er også på YouTube. Jeg var alene i studiet i dag og talte med Christina Galbiati og Ilja Lyggenbuhl.
Papsnenser er produceret af Bo Jørgensen, Christian Bækman og Mike Ditlevsen. Mit navn er Christian Bak Petersen, og på vegne af Papsnenser må jeg sige, at vi bare elsker, når folk de gør fede nye ting med brætspil.